Good afternoon, everyone. I hope you're not too disappointed. You'll get the regular speaker in as a regular order next. So first off, I'd like to acknowledge the primary person that was really working on this project is Sarah Isquick, and unfortunately she's not able to be here today. I also want to acknowledge Dr. Claire Brindis, who is the director of our Institute for Health Policy Studies and has long been an advocate for looking at the intersection between place and relationships and opportunities for youth reproductive health outcomes. I have no financial or other relationships to disclose. I also want to acknowledge that the pictures that are going to be throughout this are from our teen pregnancy prevention grantees that are located throughout the state of California. The leadership and staff at the Maternal Child and Adolescent Health Program at the Office of at the Office of Family Planning at the state, and the other staff members at the University of California, San Francisco, particularly Leah Maddock and Abigail Ahrens. So today I'm going to divide my talk into two parts. First, a little bit of background about teen pregnancy rates and the current situation there, and talk a little bit about the conceptual framework and theory around neighborhood effects. And then we'll focus the latter half on our literature review and looking at what information do we currently know about the potential roles and relationships between neighborhood effects and youth reproductive health outcomes. So as many of you probably know, the United States and the state of California has seen a remarkable decline in teen birth rates in the past 20 years. About 20 years ago, California actually was above the national average, and now we're well below. But within those numbers, it's really masking a lot of inequalities. For example, the state of Mississippi still has teen birth rates at about 55 compared to the state of New Hampshire that has teen birth rates of 15.7. And if you go even closer, if you look just at the state of California, you'll see huge disparities at the county level. So some counties, particularly within the Central Valley, still have very elevated rates of teen births, whereas the Bay Area and northern areas are much more likely to have lower rates. And then what we're interested in looking at today is even going further. So within these counties, for example, if you look at Kern County, you'll see some communities that have teen birth rates of 100 plus and others that right nearby that still are at 20 and 30. So trying to get a better understanding of what is happening at that neighborhood level that may help inform some of these disparities. So reproductive health, when you think about it, is really a nesting effect that impacts both the individual, their aspirations, their own attitudes towards reproductive health, their partner, if they and their partner have good communication, if there's violence in that relationship, family norms and attitudes, their peers, if your peers have pro-childbearing attitudes, that can impact your decision-making, your neighborhood, and then of course the overarching policy. What access do you have? Do you have comprehensive sexuality education? So all these mixed together can really impact what happens in a youth's life as well as in an adult's life. So today again, we're just focusing on the neighborhood effects. In one comprehensive review of neighborhood effects for youth health outcomes, not specifically looking at reproductive health, Sampson identified four different mechanisms that can impact or influence health outcomes. The first being social ties and interactions. So how frequently do people in your community talk to each other? Do you have neighborhood block parties? Do you even know your neighbors? Secondly, norms and collective efficacy. Is there a standard where adults reach out and try to intervene if they see a negative impact? Do they look out for each other? Do communities come together to try to improve the community good? Institutional resources, that's everything from after-school programs to libraries. And then routine activities. Routine activities in this aspect is actually also looking at landscape uses. For example, is there a highway bisecting your community? Are you able to walk to school or do you have to drive everywhere? Another way of looking at this, and this is particularly looking, and I know it's a little blurry, I apologize for that, are looking at how neighborhood environments can really impact inequalities. For example, is there significant segregation? Do you have quality housing available? Are resources distributed differently in different communities. And all of these can then end up having an impact on health. So within the field of reproductive health, we've spent a lot of time looking at those individual factors, race, ethnicity, family income, education level, for example, but less so looking at those neighborhood effects. And oftentimes when you add neighborhood effects into the equation, many of those individual variables become less significant. So for example, your family income, of course, is very important, but if you look at overall neighborhood poverty, that can really have a different impact. If whether or not you were arrested is very significant, but also what the community arrest rate in general is. Violence is one area that we've looked at a lot at the individual level, but less so at the neighborhood level, this concept of ambient hazards, of your perceived risk just in your neighborhood. And of course, acculturation. So for the individual, the amount of time that individual has been in the United States, but for the neighborhood, what is the proportion of immigrants and looking at those interactions. So our literature review, we wanted to see what is happening in the field in about the past 20 years. We began with a systematic review of some of the major search engines, and then we also, though, looked at all of the references from those ones that we found, kind of a snowball study effect to try to locate others. We looked at three particular outcome variables. First, teenage pregnancy, and with teen pregnancy, because it's so difficult to measure, we also included teen births. Sexual initiation, and again, all of these, because every study has a little bit of a different definition, we looked at age at first sex and as well as sexual initiation. And contraceptive use, which we also included condom use, which oftentimes was when many of the studies looked at males, that was the outcome variable of interest. We only included studies with sub-county geographic units. That means zip codes and census tracts or census blocks. Many studies look at state-by-state comparisons or county comparisons because that data is easier to come by, but what we were really interested was that neighborhood level. Of that, we found we had a subset of about 50, and upon further refinement, we ended up with about 22 studies that met that criteria. One other important piece to mention is these were all quantitative studies that included both those individual variables as well as neighborhood variables. So looking at those three different outcomes, the first one, the neighborhood factors associated with teen pregnancy. As you can imagine, poverty is associated with higher rates of teen pregnancy. Also safety, that community arrest rate is also associated with higher rates. In contrast, affluence, so wealthier neighborhoods were associated with lower rates of teen pregnancy, education status as well. One of the interesting things, though, we found, and we'll also find this in some of the other studies, is the neighborhood composition. So one study showed that having more than 50% Hispanics in a given census tract was associated with higher rates of teen pregnancy. But another study found that as any particular racial or ethnic group, the percentage increased, that was associated with lower rates for that racial ethnic group. So factors associated with sexual initiation, somewhat similar. Again, poverty is associated with earlier ages for sexual initiation. Youth idleness also associated with that. That means the percentage of youth who are neither in school nor employed. And safety, again, associated with higher rates of sexual initiation. Interestingly, again, the neighborhood composition is not necessarily what one would expect. While the percentage of married households was negatively associated with sexual initiation, and the percentage of foreign-born were, there were mixed results for African Americans. One study found that as the percentage of African Americans increased, the rate of sexual initiation decreased for non-black girls. Another study showed that neighborhoods that had more than 30% African Americans was positively associated with earlier sexual initiation. And then finally, neighborhood factors associated with contraceptive use. Again, poverty is actually not necessarily what one would expect. For boys, at least, the use of condoms at last sex is positively associated with poverty. For girls, it's the opposite. The affluence is positively associated with contraceptive use. So a little, again, not necessarily what you would initially assume. Neighborhood composition, in this case, the percentage of adult females who are divorced or separated showed a negative relationship with female contraceptive use, but female labor force opportunities in those neighborhoods were positively associated with contraceptive use. Finally, collective efficacy in this case, meaning neighborhood cohesion, was positively associated with contraceptive use. So one of the real challenge, there are many challenges with looking at neighborhood effects, and one of them is the issue with geographic variables. First, census tracts and zip codes rarely, if ever, define a neighborhood. Typically, the definition of neighborhood is coming from a map, an outsider researcher. They're very rarely, if ever, talking with the community members themselves to define those neighborhoods. Many of these studies actually were using national surveys that were not even designed to look at these neighborhood effects. So it's kind of a forced study upon them. Very few actually look, very few of the studies or the survey instruments themselves were designed to look at neighborhoods. And then, of course, the very differing definitions of those outcomes, as well as the other variables. Things like, what does neighborhood cohesion mean? What does neighborhood efficacy mean? These studies all had very different definitions of what that meant and how they measured it. And finally, one of the real challenges with these neighborhood effects is the difficulty of disentangling the effect of the family or the individual with the neighborhood socioeconomic characteristics. People who are able to get out of poor, unsafe neighborhoods, by and large, do. Wealthy people move to wealthy neighborhoods. Poorer people, or people who have fewer opportunities, are forced to stay behind in the less safe neighborhoods. So trying to figure out what part of that is the poverty of the neighborhood and what part of it is the poverty of the family is really, really challenging. Couple of points of discussion. Again, those measurement challenges and things that we would really encourage thinking moving forward is involving the communities themselves in that definition of neighborhoods. Also, the challenge of measuring really dynamic social processes. Many of these studies, it's easy to measure poverty rates and education rates of a community. It's much more challenging to try to define something like neighborhood efficacy and some of those cultural norms. There's still so much to understand about the differences by race and ethnicity, but also by gender. Why, in some cases, do you have a different impact for the males in a certain community than in the females? So a lot more work to be done there. And some of the policy and program implications. First, that challenge of focusing on high-need areas. Many of these areas, it's layer upon layer of high needs. So many of these communities are ones that don't have after-school programs, that suffer from high rates of obesity, that have other challenges as well, and really trying to work more closely with those communities and help improve overall rates, not just in looking at reproductive health, but dropout rates and things that also interact very closely. And recognizing when working with these communities that different communities have different neighborhood contexts, and adapting our programs, adapting our work to that to make it more appropriate. So I'm not sure. Do you want to do questions? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so the question was those tables where we're looking at neighborhood effects and the impact on that, was that after controlling for those individual effects? Yes. So all of those significant outcomes, again, all of the studies that we included had both individual and neighborhood effects and were conducted in a multi-level regression analysis typically. Okay, thank you.